Behold, you're born king.
Hey guys, welcome to the Weekend Buzz. My name's Tony.
I'm Dale.
And yeah, very, very warm welcome to just... Oh, it's going to be an epic... I think it's going to be an epic one, Dale. I know it's going to be an epic one. I know this because you're going to tell us what's going to be coming up in this week's show.
So, in this week's show, we start off as we always do with our 10% discount code from our friends from Limited Edition Comics.
Yep.
We then move on to our rewind of the week, which was Pacific Rim.
Check.
Then we move on to Tony's favourite section, which is Buzz News, where we go through the top five movie news stories, some a little bit quirky, that we have found throughout the week. Mm-hmm. Then we move on to our main movie review of the week, which is King Arthur, Legend of the Sword.
Yep.
And then we kind of do our giveaway. So our giveaway from this week from New Edition Comics, we announce our winners, and then we move on to the new competition. Simple as that.
Yeah, new prizes, and just a fresh start to the next episode, which we're not going to get on yet because we've got this episode to go through. So to start us off, Dale, can you give us the give back code for this week, please?
So the give back code, so the 10% discount code is all in capitals, KING2017. Simple as that. Four letters and four numbers. Easy peasy. Put that in the coupon section on the checkout on Limited Edition's website. That link will be in the description below. And get 10% off on all of your nerdy goodies.
Wow, I love it. So, yeah, pops, comics, you name it, they've got it, guys. Remember King, and what was the other bit, Dale?
2017.
He's got it. See what I mean? I don't even have to remember it. I'll just text him, be like, Dale, what's the discount code? Bosh, get my stuff. Now we're going to get into this week's rewind. So, this week's rewind is director Guillermo del Toro's, did I get that right, Dale? Pacific Rim, starring Charlie Hunnam, Idris Elba, and Ron Perlman. So
Ron Burgundy, then.
Ron Burgundy, did I say?
No,
You're a liar.
I thought you were going to say Ron Burgundy.
No. So, synopsis, guys, as a war between humankind and the monstrous sea creatures wages on, a former pilot and his trainee are paired up to drive a seemingly obsolete special weapon in a desperate effort to save the world from the apocalypse. Now, I got stuck there, Dale, because, how can I say, drive and seemingly obsolete special, I don't know, I know what they're
pilot
getting at.
Pilot the Jaegers.
Yeah, that's what I mean, it's just, I love them, do you know what I mean? It reminds me so much of the
power. You hadn't seen this, had you?
So. No, so I kind of watched it and I was just like, I was blown away with it, because... Yeah. I like Charlie Hunnam anyway. I was a big Sons of Anarchy fan, so his little movie things that he's starting to do, it's really catching my eye. Yeah, so let's give like a fan's perspective first. So let's hear your kind of, you know, loose way of kind of reviewing this, Dale.
I love the concept of it. It was much like Gundam Wing back in the title, like part Gundam Wing with the Jaegers. I love the kaijus. I thought the character design, which Del Toro near enough always nails, was awesome. Like the way the Jaegers looked, the fact that you had like the Chinese Jaeger, which was piloted by triplets, and it had like all different personalities for them. And it turns out that Charlie Hunnam's Jaeger, Gypsy, was actually outdated in comparison to the rest. And then you've got like the Russian one, which is just like a huge rhino kind of big beat stick of a machine. You know, I think the same thing I say about this a lot about the British actors when they try to put on American accents, and it was okay with Idris Elba and it was okay with Charlie, but sometimes they get lost. And you can like they
the
don't.
Twang comes.
Yeah,
back.
Yeah. They don't. Yeah, they don't. Okay. You don't get the full committal.
Yeah.
And which is fine. Like I'm not. I enjoyed the movie thoroughly. Out. Like I thought it was funny. I thought Charlie Day was quite funny in it. I just feel that sometimes the accents can slip through, and you're better off just being British, using your natural accent, rather than trying to put on an American one that might not sound quite.
You say that. I mean, Charlie's now got a kind of American-y twang to him anyway. So regardless if he went back to his natural accent anyway, like he's kind of lost on translation.
I don't know. Even with Sons, he's kind of. I think the biggest issue he's got is he's actually. So he was born in Newcastle, right?
Yeah.
So he should naturally have a Geordie accent. But where he did like London gangster films, like Green Street and that, he actually put on a West London like Cockney accent.
Yeah, I remember.
And that's
that.
Kind of melded with his Newcastle accent.
Yeah.
Then when he's gone over to America to do Sons of Anarchy, he's mixed a bit of American in there. So quite a lot of pit times, what I see people saying is, you can't actually get what his accent is, because he's trying to put on an American accent when he's got a bit of Geordie in him and a bit of London in him, and it's just, it gets a bit jumbled up. He has a very, very, very unique, like, accent. Like, when,
he does.
When you actually listen to him, when he's actually British, when he's speaking English, not English, sorry, he does speak English, but when he's speaking with just his normal accent, and when he does, like, interviews on TV and that, you get it, you're like, yeah, okay, cool. Whereas with Sons, it kind of, the accent kind of grew with you as you got along.
Yeah.
You just didn't really care. You're like, we get it.
Yeah.
You know, we're happy to keep going with this.
I mean, looking at the thing that struck me about this film, and I loved, and it's the same with Del Toro anyway, like you hit upon, like, his touches.
Yeah.
I love the costume designs in this.
Everything.
Like the costume, like when they were putting on like the armour.
Yeah, yeah, to get into the Jaegers.
Oh, man. Like, it was just so well done. And when you look at it, really, like, you just take a good pause and a deep look at it, you're kind of just like, wow.
So this is what I mean, this is why I've got such a, not a connection to the film, but it's why I enjoy the film so much, is I first saw it in D-Box. So you can just imagine that when they start to walk, and you've got all the music going and stuff like that, you actually, the chair starts going in a walking motion, everything.
No way.
And it just, because it's an individual chair, you just felt as if you were in the Jaeger, which is what added to the illusion and the perception to me with the film. I loved Ron Perlman's cameo.
Oh.
I thought it was so funny. It was awesome. It was so Ron Perlman. It was.
That was it. It's kind of Hellboyish in a sense. It was so Perlman.
It was like, yeah. That's what I mean. It was like, we can't get Hellboy done. Let's chuck him in this. He works just as well.
I like that.
Yeah, like I thoroughly enjoyed it. Like I said, the character creations was awesome. The CG again was really on point.
Beautiful,
for a film that was done
beautiful.
in 2013. I know it's not old,
yeah,
but it's still very, very good. And Rinko Kikuchi, she plays Mako Mori.
Yeah,
she was also very, very good. She was a very strong female-led character.
Oh, very great support in that.
And her backstory kind of drip-fed. It was like drip-fed throughout the warm-up. My only disappointment, my biggest disappointment with it is, I didn't see enough. Like, I wanted to see this. Well, there was only like 5 Jaegers.
Yeah.
And the Kaijus grew up in level, so they kind of got stronger and stronger as they went along. I don't feel I got to see enough Jaegers. Like, I wanted to see a range of Jaegers, and like the standout moment that I love is the battle over, like, I think it's Tokyo.
Yeah.
Well, cause, all right. Spoiler alert, guys. Basically, The Kaijus attack. Normally they only attack one at a time. This time they're attacking two at a time because they're putting over this breach. This breach in the ocean floor bed, which is allowing them to get through from the different dimension. Mm. Now they go up, and the Japanese Jaeger gets wrecked. The Russian Jaeger gets wrecked. So they put gypsies out there. They put because they have to. The pilots have to connect with the machines.
Yeah, they do, yeah.
And they have to connect with their co-pilots, which is why, like, the triplets work so much better, which is why they didn't want to put Charlie Hunnam's character out there with Miko, because they didn't share a strong enough connection. And at the start of the film, he's operating
brother,
the Jaeger
yeah.
with his brother, and his brother gets killed and taken out by a Kaiju. Anyway, so it was all about building the relationship between Miko and Charlie's character, and then it was just about how this, you know, the bond got stronger, and it then allowed their Jaeger to become a standout because their connection was stronger on the basis. Anyway, the battle throughout Tokyo was absolutely awesome. Like, he picks up a freight train and starts using it as a sword. And it's, like, such an outdated thing. Like, you look at the Japanese Jaeger, it has all of these spinning arms, it has all the updates, and it's like Mark V or something, and Gypsy's like a Mark III. But because it's so simple and simplistic, it still has enough to do the damage. I think the battle scenes were just absolutely awesome, out of this world.
Like you said, for its time, when you think about it, I mean, like you said, it's not a million miles away, but when it was released, it was so, I never watched it at cinema, obviously I watched it at home.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like what you were like last week with Alien. So I'm kind of like, you know, it was wasted on me watching it on a TV screen. It should have been me watching it
on a
big, say, IMAX feature. That, I mean, if it ever come up and they were like, we're going to release this in IMAX.
When the second one comes out, do a double back to back. Yeah, definitely.
And I'm looking forward to that second one as well.
See, the only reason I'm not is because I hate, this is just me personally.
Go on.
I hate it when they change the lead character.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, me personally, I really like Charlie. I think he's a good actor. He's a fun actor. And I watch what he's in. Like you, I'm a fan of Sons. And I just feel it's disappointing because for me, it kind of breaks that character bond you've had with that. That character going across.
Yeah.
But it'll be interesting to see where they take it. You know, hands down, I'll still go watch it. And like I said,
Boyega's in it, man. Like, he's hitting a bit of a stride at the minute. I'm kind of hoping. I mean, I've seen some of his, like, I follow him on Twitter, and I've seen some of the pictures he's put up of him being on set and stuff like that. And he looks good. Like, I'm kind of looking forward to seeing what he can bring to that world.
Yeah.
But, you know, like you said, like, when you do build that character connection up with a character, and then all of a sudden he's not there no more.
Yeah.
You're a bit like, oh, can we just follow the story on?
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I loved everything. Like I said, like, watching it, I could see why you were so hyped about it when you were telling me about it. And I was like, oh, well, I've never seen it. This would be a good one.
Yeah.
Because everything hit a note with me.
Yeah.
Like, I could see where you were coming from, like, costume-wise, you know, the CG, the story, the way it was, like, there was different factions all brought into it, like, different Jaegers and stuff like that. So I think it was, you know, I can see why people panned it in another sense. For weak storylines and stuff like that, but the cameos,
you can't get everything right. No, that was the issue. Like, you couldn't get a strong storyline mixed with that type of concept, because it's just for the movie theater, that is just such, it was one of, like, a, you know, everyone's seen, like, monsters come and attack Earth.
Yeah, exactly.
But the character creations that Del Toro did was completely different, and you were just like, wow. For then him to rather go, oh, we've got a Hulk, or we've got a superhero doing it.
Yeah.
He was like, these are man-made.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know.
And I like that as well, that aspect, when you're seeing them being built, and you're seeing the inner workings. But that's what Del Toro brings to it. He won't just go, there's a Jaeger, there's your main character. He'll be like, this is the intricate workings of this. Look at Hellboy, for example. You know, with, obviously, Matey Boy, who goes under, what, I've forgotten his name again, I'm sorry.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, hit the inner workings of his helmet, like,
the clockwork guy as well, in the first one. He was deadly. And
oh, like, you just think to yourself, like, he brings so much to the table, and it's exciting when he says, I'm doing this next, or I'm doing that next. And I can see that if he did get the story on point with this, he could have literally, like, just nailed, like, one of the most epic.
I don't think you could have, like, I think that that's the issue. I don't think you could have got the storyline. Because, like, people went there and they were like, we want to see the Jaegers.
Yeah.
We want to see the battles between them and the Kaijus.
Yeah.
And he did a fair amount of that, which was fine.
Yeah.
But then he also tried to balance it up with getting a storyline going. So he kind of sacrificed half the story for he did half and half.
Yeah.
Which, you know,
in a degree. I mean, if you're not picky about your films and you're going to go popcorn, bosh, sit down and enjoy everything.
Yeah.
Or even if you're a fan of what come beforehand.
Yeah.
Then you're going to go and you're going to be like, well, brilliant.
You know, I didn't go there and be like, this is going to be the best Oscar film ever. Yeah, I went there like, you know, giant machine versus alien giant monsters. I want to enjoy this.
Exactly.
And, you know, I did enjoy it. I'm not saying it's the best movie ever. There are bits that could have been improved, like you said, storyline. I think the ending was a little bit, you know, lackluster, and you know, get out of jail free card. So basically, at the end, Idris Elba's character and Charlie Hunnam's character, they go down to the breach in the Atlantic Ocean, and the idea is they're going to drop a nuclear bomb in the rift.
Yeah.
And close the rift in on itself so the kaijus can't keep coming through. And as they go and do this, they get attacked by, like, a level 3 kaiju and a level 4 kaiju. And then out of nowhere, a level 5 kaiju comes out. And it's the biggest they've ever seen and takes it on. And the only way for them to destroy the breach, because their eject sequence of the... So the idea is to put Gypsy, because it's an older Jaeger, has a nuclear bomb in it. The idea is to send that through the rift, let it blow up, close the rift, and, you know, everyone's happily ever after. So the way that they can get out of it has to be manually piloted.
Yeah.
So Charlie Hunnam has to make the sacrifice to go through the rift to blow it up himself. But as he goes and does it, he gets ejected from it as well, blows up the rift, and survives.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, that was them with, we're going to make a, we, like, we'll tie it off so everyone's happy. but we might want to do a second one with Charlie. Now looking back at it, you could have just let Charlie, like, it could have been one of them darker endings where Charlie did go down with the ship.
Yeah, and just goes with it.
Yeah.
I mean, to be quite truly honest with you, I mean, I can see Charlie probably making a cameo in the new one. Easy.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it can be done. I don't think he'll take the lead.
No, he wouldn't take the lead, but he'll make a cameo, he'll make an appearance. If he don't, it'll be criminal. But,
yeah.
I mean, it just depends where they take this next one.
Yeah.
But like I said, I would have rather have seen that ending. I would have rather have seen, you know, Charlie just go down with the ship. And
to be fair, though, I think they did have a much... they kind of built up the sorrow in the ending already because, spoiler alert again, guys, there's another Jaeger who's run by he's like the big badass Jaeger,
yeah,
the boss of a Jaeger that can't be Robert Kaczynski, so Chuck Hansen he plays, and basically Robert Kaczynski's character runs this, like, the newest Jaeger, the most recent Jaeger, and it's the best Jaeger there is, and he's obviously competing with Charlie throughout the entire time. They make up friends, they go down to do this big mission. Idris Elba's character goes down there with them as well. You know, and Idris Elba with Charlie's character, their Jaeger, they do the sacrifice to blow themselves up to distract the other Jaegers so that Charlie's can go through. So they'd already done that sacrifice moment. So it was kind of like, those two have sacrificed themselves. Let Charlie sacrifice himself, would it have been a little bit too much? But yeah, no, I enjoyed it. I didn't take it too seriously. I enjoyed it for what it was. You know, I think there could have, for me personally, I wanted more Jaegers, but then again, it would have taken away from the storyline. So I think he chose the right kind of balance, about.
There was a perfect balance. And I thank you for putting me in touch with this film, to be quite fair, because to be honest with you, I knew it was out there. I knew what it was. I knew Charlie.
It's taken
was
you
involved.
4 years and you haven't watched it, so exactly. It wasn't something you were going to.
Exactly. It wasn't something I was going to rush into. But,
yeah.
You know, thank you very much for that. I mean, I'm absolutely, you know, like you said, it was just to sit down, have fun, and enjoy what you were seeing on the screen, and I did that thoroughly. Being a fan, I want you to go first on this one because I went first.
Yeah, that's fine. I think mid-table, kind of like 6 to 7. Probably 7. I enjoyed it. I enjoy it for what it is. There's definitely rooms of improvement. Don't take it too seriously. So, yeah, 7 out of 10.
I mean, I was going to go 6 because obviously, like I said, it was kind of like I could revisit it.
Yeah.
So I'm kind of like, it was a fun film and I can revisit it. There was plot holes and, you know, there were some character aspects I didn't like.
Yeah.
But the character cameos that were there and what was there.
I'm happy to come down to a 6.
It's up to you, man.
The only reason we're at 7 is probably because my connection to the way that I watched it first. Yeah. I can re-watch the film, but it does take me a little bit while, so I'm more than happy to meet back down at 6. I think 6 is, you know, fair enough on that one.
Fair point. So basically, here on the Weekend Buzz, our rewind for this week was Pacific Rim. We are now scoring that a 6 out of 10, guys. So go and catch that film. It's a good, fun film. Dal, anything more to add on that?
Yes.
Apart from what I like next.
What next? So next week's rewind,
yes,
linking up with our movie review for next week, will be probably the one and only, and it should have only been this one, was Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl.
The original. Yes.
You know, so I remember this one as well because it was the first time. This was at the point when it came out. It was the point where VHSs were starting to drift off.
Yeah.
This was the first DVD I got my mum to buy with a DVD player. I was like, mum, we need this movie.
Yeah.
And we need to upgrade to a DVD player. And she was like, you probably don't because you got about 4 VHSs at home. But okay.
Yeah.
Here's your DVD player. Here's your DVD.
Nice.
Enjoy. And that's when DVDs were like price of Blu-rays, £15.
They were like, expensive. So, I remember that. I remember paying $19.99 for a DVD, and it was the original Bad Boys in the hard case.
Yeah. Steelbooks are quite tough to get hold of. Anyway, so next week's rewind will be Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl.
Nice, though. I love it. Now, guys, you've heard the review for Pacific Rim. You now know our rewind for next week is going to be the original Pirates of the Caribbean. Now we're going to take you on the journey I love most, where we can talk about anything we like, we can talk about what's going to happen, what could happen, and something maybe that's just going to be made up and it's going to be fun to talk about. It certainly is Buzz News, guys.
Well, what I would like to mention is Tony mentioned this to me before the we started recording this. Now, remember last week we talked about the Judge Dredd TV series, and we were like, it'd be awesome if Carl Urban was involved. Well, actually, I think someone's been listening to our thoughts, because there was a leak online today that said Carl Urban is actually linked with the lead role.
Nice! Go on, Carl!
So,
I think that's absolutely awesome. That's the best news for that project, I think, that could happen in a million years, because Carl brings that roughness. And I mean, look at when we revisited Dredd in our rewind, you could totally see, you know, he suited that character, and there was more kind of, he had more to bring in that character. I'm really happy. I hope it comes forth. Any thoughts on that, Dale?
No. Like, again, I'm still concerned that BBC have got it, or
yeah, you're like,
suppose we've got it.
Taboo.
However,
we were saying a lot about taboo.
Yeah.
You know, we were like,
they can do it. No arguments with it. But yeah, could be very, very good.
I mean, talking about TV, I'm going to bring something up that, I mean, we're recording this on a Thursday, and there was some news that come out. There was a couple of photos, and there was a trailer, and it is TV-based. I know we're going to go TV here, but it's the new Star Trek Discovery.
Yeah, I was trying to say on the back of it.
Yeah, like, basically, you know, there was a trailer dropped. There was a couple of pictures, there was a synopsis as well. And also there was one guy on Twitter, which set Twitter alight for the Trekkies, and he was given four scenes from different kind of sections from different episodes. But I've watched the trailer. Have you seen the trailer yet, Dale?
No, I haven't seen
the
trailer
yet. It looks beautiful, mate. I'm telling you now, obviously, I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to follow in the footsteps of old Chris Pine and Zachary Quinto's Star Trek, that zone, which is quality. Because if you look at what they've got, there's a nice iconic scene. I'm going to say it's iconic. I mean, looking at the trailer is when the new first officer, which we're going to be following. We're not going to be following a captain. We're going to be following a first officer. And she's in a spacesuit going up through like a kind of turbo lift. And it looks so beautiful. It's so nice. We get a look at Klingons. We get a look at the new ship a bit more. There's a lovely poster out where it's basically the first officer, who is a Vulcan. She's given a Vulcan salute, and the new ship's coming out through the middle fingers into like her eye. It's just stunning. And I think if Netflix and CBS can absolutely nail this spot on, they're giving it a 15 episode like kind of thing. It was going to be 13. They've given it 15. So obviously the guys that have seen
it, could be massive. Yeah.
It could be massive. But at the moment, I'm liking what I see, and I like the fact we're going to be following a first officer. It makes a change from not going, oh, well, what captain do you like? Now it's probably going to be, well, who do you like? Will Riker, Spock? You know, we're going to go down that route. So I'm happy with that. Anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, so on the back of that, I actually watched a spoof version. Well, not a spoof version, but Seth MacFarlane has released The Orville.
Yeah, which I see that. That
is a comedy version of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And it's funny.
Oh, it does.
So
what was that? What was it called? Something Quest. It was like a thing. It had Matty Boy out of Home Improvements in it. Space. Was it Galaxy Quest or something like that?
No,
It was a film, and it was kind of like, It was a TV series. The whole premise of the thing was it was a TV series, and instead of it just being just a TV series, it was actually real life in space. It was hilarious. But
that'll count as part one of our movie news.
Yeah, exactly.
Or Buzz News.
Yeah. So going on to, I've got one here. Basically, Justice League have shot multi-million-dollar reshot. Loads.
What is it with DC? I'm pretty sure they had to reshoot some Batman vs Superman, and they had to reshoot some Suicide. Are they getting to it? They watch the final cut and go, do you reckon Warner Brothers will give us another couple of mil to redo this?
But you say that, but then there's news out there that people have seen in like kind of previews or whatever they've seen, like test audiences,
test screenings
with I'm going to get it, Wonder Woman that's coming out soon.
Yeah.
They reckon it's on point. And I'm happy with that, but then obviously, I'm getting fed up with, and I'm like you on that, I'm like, why do we have to have a couple of executives watch the film and then go, do you know what, if we had this, if we had that, and then the studio goes, do you know what, here's another 50 million, go off and reshoot.
Yeah.
Why do it?
I guarantee, right, it's only because they can go, oh, you watched it at the theatres, here's an extra 20 minutes, which actually makes the film a little bit better and makes more sense. So if you sit through 3 hours rather than 2 hours and 40, it'll make more sense and it connects the dots in Blu-ray, buy it in Blu-ray. Like, the trailer to Justice League, I would watch it hands down regardless. But the trailer actually was really good. The only thing I don't like is there's a part where Aquaman's on top of the Batmobile.
Yeah.
And the only reason I don't like that, don't get me wrong, I think the concept is awesome, like Aquaman on top of the Batmobile. Like, the screen of it is just so, like, brutal CG. It's not as if they've tried to cover it up or try to make it look,
yeah,
like, slightly real or physical effects. It just looks brutal CG and it's just like, no.
No. I mean, there is, obviously we spoke about this before, there's other rumours that Aquaman's got a massive part to play in this, as well as it's going to follow a cyborg storyline to do with the cube and stuff like that. So, I'm just totally gobsmacked. I mean, there's a quote here from a reporter who's had a conversation with one of the executives or someone that's seen one of these things, saying, speaking on a condition of anonymity, said that in the 17 months between the start of principal photography and the final cut arriving in theatres in November, that the film will have essentially been remade twice.
It's not good enough.
Like,
you don't hear... Maybe Disney keep these things under wrap, but you don't hear anything about Disney having to reshoot this, redo this.
But maybe because Disney's got things, like, nailed. I mean, they're shooting Infinity War at the moment, and they've got such a massive all-star cast that they've literally gone so lax on it, they're going, well, we'll have Chris Evans shoot his in the summer of 2017. Oh, we'll start having Mark Ruffalo maybe in the autumn. Maybe we'll start shooting him just after Chris. Do you know what I mean? I think you either have a relaxed approach to these films, you make the film and you put it out there, or you continue to tweak it to think you're making it better, to then it for all to just turn out to be a pile of rubbish, i.e. Batman Superman. Like, I was a fan of the extended cut, whereas the cut version, it was so chopped and so, you know, distraughtingly bad that you were kind of like, oh, well, what's the point? They've got so much to make up for, DC, that they're trying and they're grasping at straws here, and they don't really need to, because what they could have had, if they didn't play around with it, was a good, polished, finished film. That's enough from me. I'm on a rant now. But apart from that, anything more to add to that, Dale, before we get onto your one, my man?
No. More than...
more than ranted out.
Yeah. Basically, in summary, DC, do not remake your films.
Just stop.
Right. I love this bit of news, because this news, you know, reunites some of my favourites. I absolutely love Shaun of the Dead. I love Hot Fuzz.
Oh, and, I see this, yeah.
You know, whatever that third one they did, you know, that never really happened. Mr. Simon John Pegg and Mr. Nicholas John Frost are starting their own production company called Stolen Pictures, and their new outfit will kick things off with a comedy action horror movie, where have you heard that before, called Slaughterhouse Rules. My God, if this is anything, if this is like a scrape of paint off of Shaun of the Dead, this will be the absolute nuts. This will be amazing. It's so great to have them two back together again. Me, personally, I count Paul as their third little... I know it's not part of the Cornetto trilogy, but I prefer it to, you know.
Do you know what? Paul was one of them ones where you could sit down and watch it over and over again and not get bored.
I love it. I think it's quite funny. It's brilliant. Like, I really didn't like Seth Rogen before that. And then even then, he's still, even as an alien, he's still that typical stoner head. But it's still, you know, still good, and I enjoy it.
Oh, I love it. I think they're... I mean, obviously, we live in the area where they filmed and stuff like that, World's End.
Which was Letchworth, wasn't it?
Letchworth, Welling Garden City.
See, that's the only good thing I enjoy about it, is because I can look at the things and be like, oh, that's shot there. But the overall story, and it had not...
The World's End was shocking.
To be fair, it was... like, I get that it was following on the back of two of the biggest films of British cinema in Shaun of the Dead and, you know, Hot Fuzz. But they changed stuff they didn't need to, the differences that are noticeable already is, in, with no disrespect to any of them, in Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz, Nick Frost is the loser character and Simon Pegg is the try-hard kind of character. In The World's End, they swapped that around. Simon Pegg was the loser, Nick Frost was the successful kind of thing. Don't get me wrong, I'm all happy for a change, but... by changing just that little thing, I think it derailed the whole kind of line.
The rest of them, yeah.
Because I think if you'd kept the structure the same, no one would have complained about a rinse and repeat, but with aliens. Like, people would have loved it, and they would have got on with it. I'm not saying that's the only reason that the film kind of sucked, in a way, but it definitely was a contributing factor.
Exactly. But yeah, like you said, if it's a scrape on Sean, everyone loves Sean. Come on. You know what I mean? And Hot Fuzz and stuff like that. Timothy Dalton in Hot Fuzz. He just strikes me. I do love him in that, to be quite fair. But yeah, looking forward to it. Dow, I know where you're coming from, mate. And let's hope it just tees off a good start for their new production company.
Yeah, yeah, that'd be awesome.
That'd be awesome. How many have we got now? It's three.
Two more
we've got. Right. So, my next bit is Logan related. Now, Logan is coming out on DVD, or is out on DVD, and also they've brought out a black and white version.
They've actually officially released it.
So, basically, in a live stream Q&A with director James Mangold, he was asked about possibly if there was a spin-off with X-23. He said, Anything's possible. I've certainly talked about it. I've even talked to them about it before we made the movie. I thought she was just such a great character. But with what Daphne did, I think that's certainly possible. Now, what is your thoughts on maybe an X-23 spin-off? I thought Daphne was brilliant as X-23. I don't know what avenue they could take it, unless it would be the start of the new X-Men, if you get what I mean, or kind of...
Well, they're already doing the new X-Men, aren't they? Because they've got Dark Phoenix coming out and stuff like that. And the only way I can kind of see it is by Daphne fitting into that kind of world. As a standalone movie. I think as a standalone movie, people will go and watch it.
Yeah.
I just don't think she's a strong enough character on her own to be able to lead a film.
Yeah,
and it'll be very, very odd for an individual young mutant to have a lead role in the film. I mean, you look at the individual movies from X-Men, and it's only Wolverine, and that's because Hugh Jackman played him to a T, and it was such a strong character, and he was the most popular character. Don't get me wrong, there's popularity for X-23. I just don't think it has enough to merit a standalone movie.
She didn't have that much of a kind of vocal. Kind of, performance either, did she? She didn't need that
because of the way her character was, but
I can't, I'm like you, I can't really, I can see it in a sense, but I wouldn't like to say what avenue, and I don't think it would work in a certain sense. Maybe if she was brought into Dark Phoenix or something like that, but I don't know. I haven't read a lot about Dark Phoenix, so I don't know what kind of storyline they're going to go with, whereas, obviously, I know that Infinity Wars is based on Infinity Gauntlet. And obviously we had that was leaked. That was the one that plays Gamora. She said,
Zoe,
she said that in one interview, she slipped up. She said, well, we're going to go and shoot Gauntlet later this year. So she slipped up there. But coming off of that, going back onto this X-23 story, I think it's open for interpretation. If Mangold thinks he can pull it off and do it, then so be it. I think whoever's as well, thinking about the old, like you just said, Hugh Jackman playing Wolverine to a T, I think when they do come to casting Wolverine again, I think whoever plays him is going to be in for a torrid time, because that's Hugh Jackman's role down to the last morsel.
Well, that's the question as well. Like, you could just put Daphne in it and say Daphne's going to be the new Wolverine kind of structure and build it around her.
Yeah, exactly. Right, well, have you got another one, Dale?
Yep, so last final one. Move story of Ziwig is... the Emoji Movie got its first full trailer release.
Oh, I've seen it.
What a pile of poo emoji.
Oh, exactly. Although, Patrick Stewart's poop, that's going to be amazing.
All it was a little poo emoji coming out of the toilet going, and then Patrick Stewart just goes, what do we do now, son? Do we wash our hands? And then the kid goes, do we wash our hands? And his dad, Patrick Stewart goes, no, and laughs out as he walks out. It was ridiculous. It was like... Wreck-It Ralph. It's all about emojis inside a phone and some kid trying to send a text to another girl. And basically, the inside of a phone is exactly like Wreck-It Ralph. The emojis have to be ready to go.
Yeah.
And so they get put on this little port or something and jumps out to a phone and gets sent across to the other person's phone. And it's one emoji wants to not be his, you know, meh emoji. Yeah. He's actually meh. Called you the know what I mean? Meh emoji.
Yeah.
And he doesn't want to be the meh emoji. He wants a more. He wants to be like happy or
crappy. I'll tell you what, right? You
it's,
say...
it's exactly like Wreck-It Ralph. It's emoji. It's absolute
I'm going to put it out
there.
I'm going to rather look forward to Wreck-It Ralph 2 than this, to be fair. But
there's nothing wrong with Wreck-It Ralph. Let's get this right. All right. I'm not slating Wreck-It Ralph. Yeah. I'm slating the emojis. Not only does emoji suck in general texting.
Dale's on it.
This was just... It's just Oh my god, how can someone go, do you know what would make a really good film? An emoji film. Excellent, here's your money. But no one can go, do you know what would make a really good second season? Firefly. Nah, we don't want that. Like, it just blows my mind.
It does blow your mind. And to be quite fair, Dale, you're like, oh yeah, but this, that, and the other, an emoji film. You wait until, obviously, is in production, the Play-Doh movie.
How has it taken? Right, unless they specifically did this, right? This if they specifically did this with The Incredibles, it's very, very clever and very, very smart, because obviously there's a link, there's a line that Syndrome says, which is something like 23 years too late or something like that, something years too late to Mr. Incredible. And it turns out when Incredibles 2 comes out, it's that exact amount of time.
Yeah.
Like, that's clever. But if there's no reason for it, and they're just like, yeah, we were waiting on Disney to give us a bit of money or something like that.
Yeah.
What is wrong with you people? How can there be people out there going, here's the Play-Doh movie, here's the emoji movie, here's, like, Lego Ninjak movie.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I've seen that. Jackie Chan. I like the voice actors in that.
The Lego movies are okay because they're quite funny and they're very, very well done. Pew, pew. But the emoji movie, come on, people.
I know, it's gone too
extreme.
My
God.
Now.
There was the Angry Birds movie as well. There was, what was that? The Mushy Monsters movie.
Oh my God.
Peppa
Pig movie, that's been out as well.
I get little stuff like that because when I was a kid, you know, they would make movies like that. Yeah. They would go straight to DVD.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like, how are those movies getting made, but other bigger ones that should be getting made aren't getting made? Hellboy 3, I know they're rebooting it, but...
Oh, that's going to be so sick!
Anyway, Witcher TV series as well. I'm looking so forward to that.
Oh, that's going to be awesome as well.
So yeah, that is this week's instalment of Buzz News. Join us next week for more.
I think it's now time, Dale, to go on to our main feature review.
Behold, you're born king.
This week's main review is director Guy Ritchie's King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, starring Charlie Hunnam, Jude Law and Eric Banner. Now, synopsis time, guys. Robbed of his birthright, Arthur comes up with a hard way in the back alleys of the city. But once he pulls the sword from the stone, that's one aspect that's really getting to me down so far. He is forced to acknowledge his true legacy, whether he likes it or not. Dal, there's a trailer in there somewhere.
You want him to think big? Give him something big to think about.
You wanted the prophecy? This is your prophecy. The man who pulled sword from stone. Behold, you're born king.
So, back here on Earth. Now, I was saying to you, I can't think of that moment when he pulls the sword out of the stone, because David effing Beckham spoiled that whole damn moment
to be fair, for me. Like, I didn't mind it. But I did at the exact same time. Like, I was kind of in the middle. Because he was trying to act like such a bad... So, for those of you who don't know, part of the whole storyline is King Arthur's father, father's brother, his uncle, killed his mother and father. Jude Law's character killed his mother and father because he wanted to perform the dark arts.
Yeah.
And Arthur got sent away, was hidden away.
Yeah.
Now, the stone, the sword and the stone, Excalibur, rises, and they're getting people of the same age to try and pull it out, because the only bloodborn relative to the king can pull it out.
Yeah.
Charlie Hunnam's character's like, you know what, screw this, moves out of the way, pushes his way to the front of the queue to go and pull his sword. To be like, look, it's clearly not me, can I go off somewhere else? And David Beckham is there as like the head lead of this group of...
Henchmen.
Yeah. And they've scarred up half his face, and now he turns around and he's trying to be an absolute badass. He's trying to be like, oh, like,
Charlie Hunnam comes up and goes... He literally goes, literally, this is like this. So
Charlie Hannon comes out and goes,
shows you the face, and yeah.
Charlie Hannon comes out and goes, what do you want me to do with this? Or where do you want me with this?
Well, I tell ya, if you go and put 10 digits, one there and one there on the sword, and pull it out.
And that was exactly how it sounded. And it was the most plastic and horrid bit of acting I've ever seen in a Guy Ritchie film ever. It was horrid. It was
end of review.
It just felt like it was, you know, we've had a couple of drinks.
No, it was like, you know, it was Guy Ritchie going,
yeah, alright, I'll be in the movie.
It was Dave Beckham going, Guy, you got a space for me in your next movie? And he's like, shh, I've already cast it. Yeah, sure, yeah. David, you can be this. You can be the this really, really important character. He's the
lead henchman. Yeah,
lead henchman. Yeah, lead henchman, yeah. David. Yeah.
Lead,
should
lead.
Do that. Oh,
lead.
Really?
Yeah.
Cool. We've got to mean you up a little bit, though. Do you want Sir Alex to throw a boot on my head again? Nah.
Prosthetics.
We'll just prosthetic half your face. We'll make you look real badass. You'll look like an absolute hero.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, literally, that ruined it for me. Because if you think about the story of King Arthur, leading all the way up to that point, I was interested.
See, you can't look at the film like a standard backstory to King Arthur. This is what I learned real early on in this movie.
It's like,
which is why I kind of enjoyed it a little bit.
It was kind of, oh my God.
It was, no, you'll get this when I say it. There was a part in it which had, it was Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Barrels.
Oh, it was Lock, Stock.
There's these parts where Charlie Hannon's character, Arthur, is around and he's like, look at Back Scratch and look at Johnny Two Fingers or whatever. And they started talking about how they'd made this heist go on.
And with it was the Vikings.
Vikings. And it was so Lock, Stock. And I was like, to be fair, you've kind of changed it up a bit. You've made it a British gangster movie in King Arthur's time.
In Camelot.
And it actually worked quite nicely. I liked it. And there was a couple of bits that were shot the same as Lock, Stock. Like when they're running through the streets, there's like cameras on their chest.
Different moments in different scenes.
And it looked really, really good and entertaining. I didn't take it too seriously at that point. As soon as I knew David Beckham was in it, I wasn't going to take it too serious. My first thoughts, though, when the starting scene comes on, is there's this giant warlock and he's riding these elephants into battle.
Lord of the Rings. Straight off.
I was like, no.
I was literally like, and you saying about falling asleep, as soon as it come off and then the massive elephants were going, and they had the temples on the elephants, I was like,
I've seen this before.
This is Mordor all over again.
The worst thing about it was, the bad guy is building a tower, and at the top of the tower, when it's complete or when something's going on, it lights up orange.
Yeah.
So it's like, you trying to tell me you want the next Lord of the Rings job or something?
Yeah, you're trying to tell... Well, we know he's not going to do Lord of the Rings yet, because he's going to go and abuse Aladdin now for Disney. So we've got all that.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
Get a Cockney Aladdin. All right, guys, so what we're going to do is we're going to go have some fish and chips, and then we're going to go break into this bank down the road. Then we're going to run in, and we're going to batter Johnny over the head. All right, we're going to steal this lamp, and we're going to get it to the geezer down the road for a fiver. Cool.
Now, you know Tony Tiptoes? He went down there, and he kind of said, no, look, you know who would be absolutely great to play Aladdin? Finny Jones. I'm putting it up.
Don't, he's already been booked. David Beckham. David Beckham's already got his cameo booked. Oh, anyway. Yeah.
No, we're going
to be fair, I quite enjoy Charlie Hunnam's character.
Charlie Hunnam was brilliant as King Arthur.
Yeah, I love the part. So there's a couple of things that I really, really loved. I love the way it worked when Excalibur was active. So basically for you to make, to unleash the power of Excalibur, you had to hold it with two hands.
Yeah.
And it kind of like activated it.
And it was nice to see like the kind of sword light up and then his eyes like went.
The eyes grew with the power.
That was good.
Like I liked that whole, the mage behind it and stuff like that. And it was a darker touch onto Merlin and stuff and everything like that. I really enjoyed like the way he fought with Excalibur. Yeah. So when you only got to see it twice, well, one and a half times, which is really disappointing because I wanted to see it more.
Yeah.
But when he is fighting with Excalibur,
Everything slows down.
Yeah, have you ever seen Immortals?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
in Immortals,
bang, 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 bang,
Charlie's
bang.
The only one moving fast, but everything else is slow motion.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that. I enjoyed the Reaper. I call him the Reaper. I don't know what he was called. Basically, Jude Law's character, when he summoned it.
He looked stunning, didn't he?
He looked badass
and
amazing.
Mad.
And until the end, right at the end that you find out it's Jude Law. So basically what happens is Jude Law character, he's part of the Dark Arts, and there's this woman in the lake. And she's like a giant squid.
She's
thing.
Like a serpent.
Yeah,
isn't she, in a sense?
And you have to kill someone you love, and she'll turn you into like this reaper.
Yeah, give you more
this
black,
insanely
dark
strong
heart
reaper. Yeah. So at the start, to kill his brother, or the King Arthur's dad, he kills his wife.
Yeah.
Then right at the end, to kill Arthur, he kills his daughter. And he turns to this Reaper, and this Reaper looked awesome. He was so fast, he was so strong. His cape was like, not flames, but it was like deteriorating. Yeah. It looked really, really nice. And the battle right at the end between Arthur and the Reaper was really, really good. And I actually really enjoyed that. So you get props for that.
See, the thing with this film that got me is the story went from being really on point and really good and then had the Lockstock moments and kind of brought lightheartedness to it to then losing its sense of direction. Yeah. And I was kind of sitting there. And that's why I got bored with it. Because yeah. I was like, this is not a Guy Ritchie film. This is a studio film with Guy Ritchie directing it.
I thought it actually was a Guy Ritchie film because it reminded me quite a lot of Sherlock and stuff like that. And I think what the issues were is he skimped on the details. And there were certain things that I wanted to see more of, like when he went on to into the Darklands.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
In a good way, he kind of summarised it down. He crushed it down and moved on with it, which was fine. It was raised, where Arthur was raised. And there's like battle scenes throughout the city and stuff like that, and that works really, really well. But yeah, there were points where you kind of lost the storyline, or you kind of got derailed a little bit, and then you had to pick yourself back onto it.
It was kind of like he would get you to a moment, and you'd be like, "Wow, yeah," and then he'd be like, "We're gonna start again," and then you'd be like, "Oh," and then like you'd build yourself up again, then the story would drop off, and you were kind of like, don't keep picking me up and dropping me off. Like, keep me at that point and that momentum where I'm just like, yes, 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 yes. And then get me to that point where everything's kicking off and we see stuff. But visually, this film, it was so good. I remember listening to Joe Rogan's podcast, and Guy Ritchie was on there, and Guy Ritchie had said on there, I'm attention to detail. I'm a storyteller. I will always tell a good story. And I'm like, with this one, I'm like, I get what you're doing with the story, but I didn't like the drop-off points. I didn't like when it was like reading a book. You'd read the chapter and it gets so good and then you'd be dropped back and you start again. You'd be so good and you'd drop back and then you'd have a good finale. I didn't like that aspect. The Lockstock moments I thought were really good.
See, I thought they were really clever.
The Vikings were kind of like the Russians in Snatch,
That's what I mean. Yeah. It was kind of good to see that gangsterness in it.
Yeah, and that's what I liked about it. In that aspect, the story just really wasn't 100% solid. And I think with Guy's films, you're kind of now going, we do like a good story and we do like a good twist, and I get where you're coming from with your other films, but this one, I don't know. I think it was probably too studio driven. He said as well in this interview he had with Joe Rogan, I keep saying about it, but he said in this interview with Joe Rogan that he was going for slots, like, so the studios would be like this slot and that slot and all different things like that, you know. So if they'd say King Arthur's gonna have a summer 2017 slot, he'd be like yeah. So that's why he's now taken on Aladdin, because they've gone, you're gonna get prime time in either a December or a summer. So he's like, I'll take it.
Yeah,
so that's where he's at the moment, even though he's like, I just want to be a, you know, story maker and make good films. I think we've had the best out of Guy Ritchie, but there may be something more to come. He might pull off Aladdin. It might be Lock, Stock and Two Smoking Aladdins. You never know. But you never know. But with this film, like, costumes, absolutely spot on. Love the costumes.
He made the contrast between Judor's character and Charlie's character look really, really good.
Exactly. And that's what I loved about it. He made you feel immersed in the world. But the kind of whole touch on Lord of the Rings, I was a bit lost.
Yeah, the Lord of the Rings influence was bad. I did not like that at all.
It was bad. But at the end of the day, it was a film where you could sit down, relax, enjoy it, and then get to the moments which you like, and then
pick it out.
Jude Law, I thought he was good.
I thought he was good. He had his moments.
Eric Banner in the beginning.
I thought he was good as well.
Yeah, very good. It was like a cameo, really, for him. I thought that was really good. Charlie, solid. There's other characters.
See, that's why Charlie worked so well, is because he didn't have to put on... he didn't have to put on any kind of accent.
No, he didn't, no.
He was kind of like, you know, I'm on it.
Yeah, and this is what I'm going to be. I am King Arthur. I am going to start off from nothing and be everything.
I think that's where the gangster fit kind of helps him as well, though. Because it was gangster, he was allowed to use his Cockney accent, and it was just like, yeah, that works really, really well.
I like it. So let's wrap this up, Dale. Let's talk about, you know, just summaries. So let's go summary. Bosh. Okay. So in a bookshelf.
I'll give you my, so my plus points. I love the parts when they fought with Excalibur. I love the Reaper concept art. I love the costumes.
Yeah.
My dislikes. I dislike the fact that it, like you said, it was on the rails, off the rails, on the rails, off the rails. Yeah. Actually, I'll tell you that back. I also love the gangster element of it. I found that quite entertaining and funny and a little bit unique. Yeah, so the on the rails, off the rails kind of put me off. I feel that, like you said, you can feel the studio's hand in it. You can kind of see where it's taking it away from him.
Exactly,
a tiny bit.
Yeah.
But yeah.
I mean, plus sides for me, did like the gangster element. I love the ensemble cast around Charlie and Jude Law and Eric, because even though Eric had a little part, it was still pivotal to the story. Costumes were brilliant.
Yeah.
The settings were brilliant. Photography was Guy Ritchie down to a T. You know, negative points. Like you said, you could tell there was studio involvement. Yeah. You could tell that, you know, he was trying to just get the film done and out there in certain aspects. The story was in and out. And
David Beckham.
And David Beckham. Oh, please, God. I didn't like that at all. Great footballer. Well, he's not really a great footballer. He could never tackle to save his life. But apart from that, that's about it, really. Yeah. So there's the positives. There's the things. I'm ready to score this.
Score it. Let's wrap it up.
I'm going to go first.
Yeah.
I'm going to give this a solid 6.
Yeah, that's fine.
I completely
agree with you. I'd say solid 6.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit less, because I'll probably enjoy Pacific Rim a little bit more than this. But yeah.
No, I could see me going and watching this again and going, I kind of
get a bit more from it. Yeah, I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Definitely, I enjoyed it more than Aliens. So I'm happy with that. Okay,
I like that.
So King Arthur, Legend of the Sword, 6.
So that's a 6 out of 10 here for King Arthur, guys. Go and catch that at your local cinema at your peril. Right. So let's get on to competition time, Dan.
Competition time.
So we're going to get on to competition time, and basically, I reckon we should start off with last week's winner. This week, come on, go for it.
So this week's winner from Alien Covenant.
Yeah.
Very, very simple. Right. Waiting for it to load. We do this live.
Live. Yeah, we are looking. Dale's literally looking at his phone.
So the question was: name Sigourney Weaver's character in the original Alien franchise.
And the winner, please.
So the winner was Paul Kitchener.
There you go, Paul Kitchener. You have won that beautiful alien pop. Get in touch with us. All you've got to do is just say hi, and we'll be in touch with you.
I'll message you. Do not worry. I'll let you know. I'll be like, hi.
Hey,
you won last week's competition. Can we have your details so we can send it to you, please?
Exactly. But I reckon, do you know what? It's time to just get on to this week.
Yeah, this week's one.
And this week's is just...
We continue it. So there's 4 parts of this crossover, and we have given away parts 1 and 2 so far. So we are now giving away part number 3 of the Button crossover, which is Batman issue 22 with an awesome cover.
Yeah, that is awesome.
If you want to know why Batman has red, and there's actually Bruce Wayne... and I'm not going to give away who the other person is on the floor. You have to read the comic. It is awesome. Such a good story arc. Such a good storyline. So, it's very, very simple. For your chance to win this awesome comic, or add it to your collection if you're one of our previous winners, like Rashid Koya, and the person, Rachel, that won issue 1 or issue 21.
Yeah she did.
Very,
she
very
did.
Simple.
She did.
What is the name of King Arthur's legendary sword?
Oh,
easy. I'm not even giving you a clue for this one. Because if you don't get it right, if you don't get that right, jog on.
Really?
Yeah, really.
Really?
Yes, shut up. Get on with it.
Really?
So, to get this comment, to win this comment, and have a chance to win this comment, all you have to do is, what is the name of King Arthur's legendary sword?
And you can win this comment, guys. It's awesome. We're going to carry on with this until, I suppose, the story arc ends. Is that what the plan is, Dale? So, yeah, you can win the whole entire story arc if you keep answering these questions right, all right?
Or if you don't get any pieces of it, or you only get 1 of the 4, just go to Limited Edition Comics. Discount code, King, all capitals, 2017. Put in discount code, bang, bosh, done.
Give back to
win
you guys.
Easy.
That's what we do here on the Weekend Buzz. So we've had the competition, guys. Now let's get on to next week. So what are we watching next
week? So next week, our rewind is going to be Pirates of the Caribbean, Curse of the Black Pearl. Then we'll bring you five new news stories.
Yeah.
Well, our main movie review of next week is going to be Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man Tell No Tales. Now, I know they've changed this to like Salazar's Curse or Revenge. Salazar's Revenge.
Yeah, yeah.
Who cares? Dead Man Tell No Tales is better. Now, the only issue we're going to have with this is me and Tony are going to be at MCM London Comic Con, which we hope you guys are too. We have the live stream going on. If you can't join us, we will have loads of giveaways as always. So join us for that right here on the NYM Buzz YouTube page. Nowhere else to go. You see all of our interviews. That's coming through with Donnie Yen. We've got four of the original Power Rangers. I mean, bad
Vern
ass.
Troyer.
Vern Troyer. Lou Ferrigno, the original Hulk.
Yeah. Oh.
Summer Gal from Firefly. Oh. I mean, come on. It's going to be awesome. If you can't make it down there, but you can make it to your laptop or your phone or your digital device, YouTube is everywhere. Check out NYM Buzz YouTube page. We'll have loads to give away to you guys as well, so you're always going to be winning.
And you can see this mug, and also we've got Tambi as well, guys. So you can check everything out on this live stream, which is going to be happening in a few weeks' time. Or is it a few weeks? It's a week time now, isn't
it?
Wow.
It's a week today.
See, I'm thinking 2 weeks
week
behind.
Today. Well, a week today, I've got to be down there setting up.
Well done, Dowie.
Anyway.
Anyway, that's enough about work. This is fun. So yeah, basically next week is the new Pirates of the Caribbean. We're going to rewind with the original Pirates of the Caribbean. I've got a quick joke.
No.
Why are pirates called pirates?
Oh, dear good God.
Because they are.
Tony is sacked.
And on that note, guys, that's it from us here at the Weekend Buzz. We can't wait to show you what we're going to be getting up to at Con, as well as reviewing that film next week, Pirates of the Caribbean. So, guys, stay fresh. We'll see you soon. Thank you very much, and goodbye.
Behold, you're born king.